This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to grab a partner and swing to the rhythms of Cajun and Zydeco music, tickle your funny bone with one of the Bard's popular comedies, or relax under the stars with opera in the piazza, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The 8th Annual Louisiana Cajun Zydeco Festival kicks off this weekend in a new location with a star-studded lineup. Scott Ages with the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation joins us now to get you ready for a two-steppin' good time. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So where is the new home of the Cajun Zydeco Festival?
It is going to be in beautiful Louis Armstrong Plaza in Armstrong Park, just outside the French Quarter in the Tremaine neighborhood of New Orleans.
And what prompted the move from the old U.S. Mint to Tremaine?
A lot of different things. When we started the festival 8 years ago, it was in collaboration with a couple of other partners. And at the time, we viewed it as sort of an incubator of our events. We were partnered with the Louisiana Seafood Festival at the time, and we also, in the following year, partnered with the French Market's Creole Tomato Festival. And so we did these three events together. The Tomato Festival had been around for a lot longer, but the Seafood Festival and the Cajun Zydeco Festival were both new at the time. And we joined forces and grew very nicely together, but we always knew that it was a temporary partnership. And so when we felt as if we could stand on our own 2 feet, we decided that it was time to branch off and go out on our own. So we thought that it would be best to just really make a clean break and move the event to Armstrong Park, which is a lot simpler to get to. It has a lot more ample parking areas. It's beautiful. It has lots of shade, which is really nice at that time of year. And it's very, very convenient.
And you have a stellar musical lineup. Tell us what's on tap.
Well, thank you. We're very, very excited to have Buckwheat Zydeco coming back. He played for us back in 2010, and it was a real highlight for everybody involved, especially me, because I'm a huge fan. And it was just fantastic. This year, we also have Rosie Ledette, who has been with us almost every year of the festival. She's just an amazing talent, fantastic performer, and huge favorite in town. Beau Soleil, avec Michael Doucet, the world-famous, world-traveling Cajun band, one of the greatest ambassadors for Louisiana culture that there is. They've performed for us many times in the past, but this year it was actually Michael Doucet who suggested, hey, why don't we do a special collaboration with Joel Saunier, who maybe not everybody around here knows, but out in Cajun country west of here, he's legendary. He's a huge star in the Cajun world and just is not seen very often, hardly ever, in New Orleans. And so Michael suggested that they do a special pairing with him, and I thought it was a terrific idea. So we're going to have Beau Soleil with special guest Joel Saunier at our festival. Gino Delafos, again, one of the famous world-traveling greatest exponents of Zydeco music that there is. The Lost Bayou Ramblers, who represent the young vanguard of the musical tradition, who are extremely popular, especially with the younger audience. We also have an attraction this year, a band that we have not featured before. It's actually a very new band on the scene. They're called Sweet Crude. They're a local band from New Orleans. Not strictly a Cajun or Zydeco band, although they sing in French for the most part. There's just something incredibly fun and infectiously great about them.
Now, you are celebrating and preserving music indigenous to Louisiana. For the uninitiated, how do you describe or define Cajun Zydeco music?
They both share a two-step rhythm. Cajun is more of the country derivation, so it will feature the triangle. They'll play rhythm on the triangle, and it will have fiddles and accordions and voice, of course, and a lot of times acoustic guitar. You can almost hear a Hank Williams-y kind of influence in some of it, because it's got that lonesome country kind of sound, very plaintive a lot of the times, sung in French in its original sound, and still quite frequently sung in French. Zydeco music emerged at exactly the same time in a totally parallel universe, musically and culturally. It became known as more of the Creole or African-American version of this sound. So Clifton Chenier, of course, is the king of Zydeco music, and the late Rockin' Doopsie and Buzushevis, and a lot of those folks were part of the earlier vanguards of the music. In a more modern setting, the music has a much more pronounced rhythm and blues influence, and heavy drums, heavy bass, and a really driving four on the floor kind of beat, which is awesome. And really, if you don't want to move when you hear this music, check your pulse, because you may be in trouble. They both have a very pronounced lilt to them, almost a Caribbean kind of lilt. And if you know how to two-step or partners dance, you're going to be in for a real good time.
And the word Zydeco, where does it come from? What does it mean?
They say that the word derived from a French term for snap beans, les haricots. And the expression that you would hear was, les haricots sont pas salés. The snap beans ain't salty. Somehow that abbreviated phrase became Zydeco, and that was the term that was applied to that music. But, you know, you might just as well ask, why does the word jazz get used to describe that music?
And yeah,
that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Now, there's more. There's an arts market.
Yes, where we showcase locally made, handcrafted artworks or usable goods, crafts for the home, those types of things. And we also have great food.
And what can we look forward to when it comes to food?
This year we have realigned our food just slightly. The emphasis is most definitely on seafood and shrimp in particular, which of course is in season right now. There's really quite an eclectic grouping of menu items and food vendors. We run the range from very traditional Cajun and Cajun-influenced food with things like boudin and boudin balls and chicken and shrimp jambalaya and those type things, and you'll find a lot of variations on shrimp po'boys. And we also have some melting pot New Orleans gumbo-y kind of food, just representing the global perspective of New Orleans as a mixture of different cultures. So you'll find Japanese-influenced food. The Japanese restaurant Ninja will be out there with their version of tempura-fried soft-shell crab po'boys with spicy mayonnaise.
Ooh.
And if you're interested in light summer fare, they also do a really fantastic cucumber salad. They serve either with seaweed or with crab sticks. If you like seafood and you like light food that's good for the season, this will be the right place to be.
So what is the best way to pass a good time at the Cajun Zydeco Festival?
Just come on down, wear some comfortable shoes, and get ready to enjoy a cold beverage and listen to some good old two-stompin' chanka-chank music. And if you need a little brush-up on your two-step style, we're going to have free Cajun dance lessons all weekend long. We've got a fantastic pairs dancing couple that teaches Cajun-style dance throughout the region, and we've engaged them to come and be on hand throughout the weekend. So between bands, when we're changing the stage over, there will be individual and individualized group lessons for folks who need a little bit of brush up on how to twirl their partner around the dance floor.
So no excuses for not knowing how to do a two-step. Huh?
Nope. Come on and find out, Cher.
Scott Ages with the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Diane.
The Louisiana Cajun Zydeco Festival kicks off this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. in Armstrong Park, 701 North Rampart Street. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane University kicks off its 21st season with one of the Bard's most popular comedies, A Midsummer Night's Dream. This production is billed as a feast for the eyes, heart, and funny bone as audiences are transported to a magical place. Joining me now to talk about this high-tech production are Shakespeare Festival Managing Director Claire Moncrief and actor Ruby Smith. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So tell me, how will you transport audiences to the 1590s?
Actually, as is often done with Shakespeare, he's been done so many times, people are selecting different eras in which to place the plays. And in our case, we've selected the 1930s. So rather than the 1590s, we will be operating in the 1930s, telling this story set to Cole Porter music. But, of course, all the themes in the play, all the situations, the romance, the magic is applicable regardless of when it's set. So, yes, our folks, our audiences will get to experience this in the 1930s.
That's pretty cool. And you're using high technology?
Yes, we're beginning to experiment with the technologies, which, of course, are always seen first in the more highly resourced venues like Broadway and LA and all of that. But we're beginning to work with some of those as well. And one of those is projections, projected scenes and sets and things. And it's particularly beneficial with this program because it deals with magic and a magical forest. And what we can do with projection so far exceeds what we could do with any sort of realistic scenery that it's working. We're kind of excited. Using the word projection sounds rather simple. People might ask in this day and age, what's unusual about that? But doing it within a theater in a way that doesn't just look like a drive-in movie is really rather difficult. The texturing, the coloring, just the design. We have someone who does the design, who pulls these images and melds them together to fit the scope of what our idea of the play is. And then all those different images, when we move from one to the other, it's technically very difficult. We have more than one surface onto which we're projecting. That itself is very difficult. Oftentimes we have music underscoring the entire show in this case, and that has to be matched to the projections. We even have a projection of live dancers that we recorded doing the tango at the opening of the show, and we had to create a shadow dance projection, so it's animated oftentimes as well. We even have aerial silk artists performing within the show. That goes very well with a fairy world. And those were things that we have heretofore not really done to this extent.
This is a comedy with several connecting stories. Can you set the stage? This is basically about a lot of star-crossed lovers.
It is. It's funny. The two lovers that we meet in the first scene are pretty similar to Romeo and Juliet. But as we follow them to the woods, it turns into a comedy instead of the tragedy that we know of Romeo and Juliet. So the worlds collide of the magical worlds, the mechanical worlds, and the lover world. And that's where the comedy really comes from, this collision of worlds.
There are also lots of clowns in the show. We have a band of would-be actors who most people know as the Rude Mechanicals, workmen trying to put on a play. And then we have in the fairy world, not just kings and queens, but troublesome little spirits that cause problems for people and enjoy watching people get at cross purposes in the situations.
So what are the themes that are being explored in this comedy?
I would say Love is Blind is a really strong one.
And what fools mortals be.
Now, Ruby, tell us about your character and what is most challenging for you in the role.
Sure. I play Helena, and she is just on the outside of a love triangle. Her ex is now in love with another woman, and this other woman is also her best friend, her childhood friend. So she's sitting on the edge watching this love triangle, and she is determined to turn it back around. And I think the challenge with Helena is finding what's still lovable about her, even though she's very hard-hearted and hard-headed, and finding the truthfulness in making this man love her again, even when he's demanding to not be around her.
And for you, Claire, as a director, what's most challenging in this production?
I think it's keeping all the different groups involved in this play in coordination and when they meet up, making those things work. We've got a world of fairies, a world of workmen, a world of royal leaders, and a world of lovers. And I talk about it as being Barnum and Bailey's circus, trying to keep them all coordinated.
Now, what sets this production apart from others is that you're changing the time span, setting this in the 1930s. How did you come to make that decision?
When we have themes, which we often do in Shakespeare, where a young woman is being controlled in her romantic life by her parents. There's only so far one can take it into the modern world without it becoming unbelievable or at least difficult to believe. In the 1930s, that was about as modern as I could get it and still allow the audience to think that these parents would and could actually, under the law, threaten her with death if she didn't follow their wishes in terms of whom she was going to marry.
What is it that endears audiences to this magical story?
It's so human. Even the fairies have all their own little quirks and foibles just like human beings do. And so we watch ourselves, and we often do that in Shakespeare. We watch ourselves up on that stage. We see people in situations like we live every day, and we're able to laugh at ourselves in this one.
Shakespeare Festival Managing Director Claire Moncrief and actor Ruby Smith, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane University presents A Midsummer Night's Dream, with performances running June 14th through July 12th in Tulane's Lupin Theater. Downtown, a romantic evening under the stars is planned for the Piazza d'Italia. Opera in the Piazza is being presented by the American Italian Cultural Center in cooperation with the New Orleans Opera Association and the Loyola New Orleans College of Music and Arts. Joining me now is Frank Maselli, chairman of the American Italian Cultural Center. Welcome to the program.
Buongiorno, Diane.
Buongiorno.
What a pleasure to see you again.
Opera in the Piazza sounds like a fun evening.
It's going to be really, really fun, really nice. I go to Italy once a year, once every other year, and about 3 years ago, I was there in the summer, and I visited a large piazza in Rome on a Saturday night. It was called Piazza Navona. You know, there were people mingling everywhere, and on one end of the piazza was a large stage, musicians and singers singing opera and folk songs, Neapolitan songs, things like that. I said, man, we have to do this in our piazza. This will be a perfect thing. So that's where I got the idea.
And you're bringing together two groups of singers. Tell us, what can we look forward to?
We're going to have singers from Loyola School of Music performing, along with some of their accompanists. Then we'll have singers from the New Orleans Opera Association with professional musicians.
And what will be performed?
We're going to do some heavy opera, some light opera, and some classical folk songs. You know, like, Che bella cosa, una giornata sole. You know, that's O Solo Mio.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Isn't that something? Now, we're going to have pieces from Mozart, Gluck, Mascagni, Puccini, Verdi, Leoncavallo, Donizetti, you know, De Curtis, De Capua, Sartori. I mean, we're going to have there's going to be quite a few songs. It's going to be really entertaining. Now, let me say this. We wanted to add a little pizzazz to this concerto. Someone gave me the idea. They said, Frank, why don't we make this a real Italian night? Let's get some Ferraris and park out in the front of the piazza. So I called my friend Franco Valobra, who's the head of the Louisiana Ferrari Club. He has now gotten me somewhere between 6 and 10 Ferraris will be parked in the front section of the piazza on display just for people to look at. There's no raffle or anything like that, so you're not going to win a Ferrari, but you'll be able to get up close to them.
And you're also providing a little taste of Italy through fine Italian wines and food?
Yeah, well, we're going to have some Italian wine, Italian beer, and pizza. You know, it's an outdoor event. It's a summer outdoor event, so we figure we keep it kind of casual.
Now, this is in the Piazza d'Italia. And often when I think of the Piazza d'Italia, I think of the big St. Joseph's Day altar. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we have many cultural events going on in the piazza. Can you tell us about the conception of the piazza and how it fits in with the cultural center?
The piazza and the surrounding parking lots are all owned by the city and are all part of what will one day be a major development on that site. The Piazza d'Italia, I think it was finished in 1978. a group of Italian men, including my dad, and people like Joe Geruso, Joe DeRosa, Sal Panzeca, a lot of Sals and Tonys, you know. Well, they wanted to create a monument to the Italian Americans, to the people who came from Italy, worked hard to make a new life, a better life, and then to the people who are here continuing to work hard. It's a plaza. And one end of it is an award-winning fountain that was designed by Charles Moore. When you go see the piazza, Charles Moore's bust, or the bust of his face, is scattered in several spots on the fountain. The piazza's won numerous awards. It's neoclassical architecture. You don't see many things like this built, you know, in the last 50 years around the country.
What will be most memorable from this evening?
The architecture of the fountain and the piazza, the music, the cars. It'll be like you're in Rome. You're really going to feel like you're in Italy. And so you can save the $2,000 airfare. Okay, you can just go home and go to sleep in your own bed. That's what I'm shooting for.
Frank Maselli with the American Italian Cultural Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane, as usual.
Opera in the Piazza takes place Friday evening from 7 to 10 p.m. in the Piazza d'Italia at the corner of Chapatoulas and Poitras Streets. Donations are suggested, and you are encouraged to bring lawn chairs. More information at AmericanItalianCulturalCenter.com. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.